Kasser turned his back on Valentine and walked away, and everyone started breathing again. Valentine smiled at Gregor and Evangeline.
My apologies for the unwelcome intrusion. My people will take care of it.
Damn Esper filth! If he hadn't killed himself, I'd have had him shot. We're too soft on Espers. You can't trust them.
They're still people, Father. Like clones.
Better not let the vicar hear you say that. The position on Espers and clones is quite clear. They exist only as the result of scientific progress and are therefore property. The church won't even admit they have souls. Now, if you'll excuse me...
He bowed low and turned and walked away. A murmur of quiet congratulations surrounded him as he moved through the crowd. The church had been putting pressure on all the families just recently over tithes and was not as popular as it might have been among the aristocracy. Gregor waited until Valentine was safely out of earshot, then grabbed Evangeline by the arm again, squeezing hard till the pain made her gasp.
Never do that again! You must never draw attention to yourself with such views on Espers or clones. Neither of us could afford an investigation into your background. No one must ever find out about you.
He gave her arm one last shake, and then released her and stalked away, his face an angry red. People hurried to get out of his way. Evangeline put her hand to her aching arm, alone in the middle of the crowd. But then she always was. Evangeline was a clone, grown secretly by her father to replace the original Evangeline, who had died in an accident. His eldest daughter had been his favorite, and he couldn't bear to live without her. And, since no one had seen her die but him, he used a great deal of money and influence and had his dead daughter cloned. He taught her everything she needed to know, then cautiously released her into society, after a long but vague illness. She did well. She'd always been a quick study, or so her father told her. Everyone accepted her as the real Evangeline. They had no reason not to. But a single gene test was all it would take to reveal her true origin, damning herself and her father. Replacement by their own clone was the aristocrat's ultimate nightmare. She'd be destroyed, not executed, only people were executed, and her father would be stripped of his title and banished. She hadn't told Finley Campbell she was a clone, even though he trusted her with the secret of his other life as the masked gladiator. She hadn't worked up the courage yet. She loved him, she trusted him, but...
Would he still love her if he knew she was only a clone?
She liked to think he would, but... She smiled humorlessly. If she couldn't trust him with that, how could she tell him about her links to the clone and Esper undergrounds? That was, after all, why she turned off the wolf S-blockers, so that the elves could smuggle the zealot in. She knew her thoughts were drifting this way and that, but she didn't seem able to control them. She owed so many loyalties to so many people, her father, the undergrounds, Finley. And failing any one of them could lead to her disgrace and death. She had to watch every word, every action, different lies for different people. Sometimes she just wanted to scream for everything to stop, for all the pressure to go away. But she couldn't. She couldn't afford to be noticed doing anything unusual. Occasionally she thought of killing herself, but then she always thought of Finley and how safe she felt in his arms. One day she would tell him, and then... One day. She looked up to see Finley casually approaching her, as though he just happened to be drifting in her direction. Her heart speeded up, and a betraying warmth flushed her cheeks. Finley stopped before her and bowed courteously, and she nodded coolly in return. Just two heirs to different clans who happened to have met in a public place. Finley smiled at her, and she smiled back.
My dear Evangeline, you're looking very well. I trust the unfortunate incident with the Esper didn't upset you unduly?
Not at all, Finley. I'm sure Wolf Security already has things well in hand. You're looking quite splendid yourself. Is that an... Enjoy.
I do so hate to repeat myself. As one of the secret grand masters of fashion, I have an obligation to be innovative and shocking at all times. It's in my contract. Your hand is empty. Could I perhaps get you a small glass of punch?
Evangeline shook her head firmly. She'd seen the punch. It was bright pink, reportedly extremely alcoholic, and had bits of unidentified fruit floating in it. Some of them seemed to be slowly dissolving. And given that the punch had been provided by the wolves, there was always the chance Valentine had spiked it with something dramatic and disconcerting. Most of the guests had had the sense and foresight to bring their own drinks. Finley smiled and produced a delicately worked silver flask from an inner pocket. He removed the cap and poured her a generous drink. Evangeline sniffed it inquiringly, then grinned at the warm aroma of good brandy. She sipped it carefully and allowed her eyes to meet Finley's. She could feel her breathing quickening, and when she handed the cap back to Finley for him to drink, his fingers lingered on hers.
"Now that our two families are to be joined in marriage, perhaps we shall have occasion to meet more often."
"That would be most pleasant. I am sure we might discover some interests in common."
"Right now, what you've got in common is a good stiff drink, and I'd kill for some."
Evangeline didn't need to look around to know who it was. There was never any doubt of Adrian Campbell's presence. Evangeline and Finley shared one last understanding glance, and then turned to face Finley's infamous wife. Adrienne pointedly held out an empty glass, and Finley filled it to the brim with brandy. She took a good gulp and nodded approvingly.
"Oh, one of your few virtues, Finley. You're vain and shallow and have absolutely no idea how to treat a lady, but you do know your booze. Evangeline, my dear, haven't seen you to talk to in absolutely ages. That's a very striking outfit you're wearing. Do feel free to come to me for advice on style and presentation at any time."
She held out her glass to Finley for a refill, and he obliged without comment. Adrienne's capacity for drink was legendary, even in a court noted for its excesses. She smiled nastily at her husband over the glass.
"Good brandy, Finley. I like my booze like I like my men. Strong, mysterious, and tempting."
"Really? I wouldn't know."
"Damn right you wouldn't."
Adrienne looked back at Evangeline, who had to fight to keep from flinching.
"It's time you were looking for a husband for yourself, my dear. Your father monopolizes your time far too much. Husbands can be boring, irksome, and a general pain in the ass, but you have to have one if you want to get on in society. Personally, I wouldn't be without one, especially when it comes to picking up the tab. Now, if you'll excuse me, I really ought to have a word with our nervous bride and groom. Someone has to tell them the facts of life."
"And who better than you?"
Adrienne smiled.
"Quite."
She stalked off through the crowd, opening up a path for herself through sheer strength of personality. Her intended prey didn't even realize she was coming. The groom, Robert Campbell, was currently being supported and encouraged by his cousin Finley's brothers, William and Gerald Campbell. Robert's father had been the Campbell's younger brother, who died 3 months previously in an accident the family still didn't like to talk about, mostly because it was so damn embarrassing. In order to keep Robert and his branch of the family from becoming a laughingstock, a marriage had been hastily arranged that would serve the dual purpose of establishing Robert in society and helping to close the gap between the Campbells and the Shreks. And of course, if something should go wrong, Robert was the most expendable member of the family at present. He was average height, as fighting fit as years of military training could make him, and at 17, old enough to marry, but not old enough to object to the marriage. He was still trying to get used to how much his world had changed. One moment, the Shreks were a deadly enemy to be fought on every occasion, and now, here he was marrying one. But he was old enough to understand politics and know his duty, especially since William and Gerald kept explaining it to him. William Campbell was tall, thin, and intense, and the bookkeeper of the family. It was a job that couldn't be trusted to an outsider, but which most members usually avoided like the plague, on the grounds it was far too much like hard work. And if they'd wanted to work, they wouldn't have been born aristocrats. Fortunately, William found numbers both more interesting and easier to deal with than people, so he was perfectly suited to the job. He didn't get out much, but he meant well, and occasionally surprised people with his firm grasp of politics. He was a Campbell, after all. Gerald, on the other hand, was the family mistake. There's one like him in every family. Too dumb to be entrusted with the important stuff, but too senior to be just ignored. The family had been trying to find a place for him all his life, with absolutely no success. Gerald was tall, blonde, and handsome, and a complete bloody disaster no matter what he did, and everyone knew it but him. The Campbell himself had been heard to say, only partly in jest, that the best thing to do with Gerald would be to make a gift of him to a family they were really mad at.
"Do try and at least look cheerful," said William to young Robert. "This is a wedding, after all, not the dentist's."
"Right," said Gerald.
"At the dentist, they take something out. Here, you get to put something in. Get my drift, eh?"
Robert smiled politely and just a little desperately. He had the look of a small animal caught in the headlights of an oncoming car. He pulled at his frock coat to straighten it and fiddled with his cravat. His dresser had assured him he looked both dignified and fashionable, but he wasn't sure of either. He felt very much he could have used a stiff drink or several, but William wouldn't let him. Valentine had offered to slip him a little something, but he declined. He didn't think he was ready to deal with one of Valentine's little somethings. Probably no one but Valentine was.
"You've been through the rehearsals. Nothing to worry about. Just say the words, kiss the bride, and it'll be all over before you know it. Remember, you have to lift the veil first, though. You'd be surprised how many people forget that. Sometimes I think we're getting a little too inbred. Brace up. Not long to go now.
And then you can settle down to getting to know your bride. Something to look forward to, eh? Eh?"
"Gerald, go get Robert a drink."
"But you said he shouldn't have any."
"Then go and get me a drink."
"But you don't drink."
"Then go and get yourself a bloody drink, and don't come back till you've drunk it."
Gerald blinked a few times, and then moved away in the general direction of the punch bowl, looking just a little confused. As always. William looked at Robert and shrugged.
"Don't mind your Uncle Gerald, boy. He means well, but he should have been dropped on his head as a baby. It's not entirely his fault that he's about as much use as a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest." "Is there anything you want to ask me before the ceremony? I mean, I am a married man."
"That's all right. A lot of people have already talked to me about that. Everyone's been very free with their advice. The only advice I could really use is how to get out of this."
William smiled and shook his head.
"Sorry, but that's not on. Duty calls. The Campbell sets the rules, and we have to follow them. If we didn't, where would we be? In complete bloody chaos, and all the other families would charge in like sharks scenting blood in the water. Or do they taste it? I've never been sure. Anyway, whatever else we may be, we're Campbells first, always. If it's any help, I felt much the same before my wedding, and I've been happy enough, I suppose."
"Keep on encouraging him like that, and we'll have to drive him to the altar with whips."
Robert and William Campbell looked up to see standing before them Adrienne Campbell, large as life and twice as loud. William flinched visibly and was still trying to find the right words with which to introduce Adrienne when she stepped forward, brushing him aside, and smiled at Robert.
"Hello, Robert. I'm Adrienne, Finley's wife. I'm the one you've probably been warned about, and you should believe every word. Mostly they try and keep me away from public functions on the grounds I embarrass them. Personally, I've never been embarrassed in my life. Fortunately for you, they couldn't keep me out of a wedding this important. You come with me, dear. There's someone I want you to meet." "Did you want to say something, William?" "No, I didn't think so. You rarely do. Come along, Robert."
And she took him by the hand in a vice-like grip and led him off through the crowd. Robert went along with her. It seemed like the safest thing to do, if he ever wanted his hand back. They passed through the outskirts of the crowd, followed all the way by scandalized whispers, and then through a side door that led into a quiet sitting room decorated with antiques of considerable age and complete hideousness. And there, among the antiques, like a single flower in a garden of weeds, sat Letitia Shrek, his bride-to-be. She jumped up the moment they entered, then stood quietly with eyes modestly downcast. She was 16 years old and very pretty, with hints of a more mature beauty to come. The long white wedding gown made her look very fragile, like a delicate porcelain figure, standing alone on a shelf. Robert looked at her, and then at Adrienne, with something like shock.
I know. You're not supposed to meet before the ceremony, but they'll overlook it this time rather than have me make a scene in front of everybody. They tend to overlook quite a lot rather than have me make a scene. I can be very good at scenes when I put my mind to it. Anyway, I brought you two together so you could talk, so get on with it. I'll run interference at the door. You've got about 20 minutes before they come and drag you off to the ceremony, so make the most of them. Just chat together. You'll be surprised how much you've got in common.
And with that, she disappeared out the door, pulling it firmly shut behind her, leaving Robert and Letitia standing looking at each other. It was very quiet in the room. They could hear the murmur of raised voices beyond the closed door, but that might as well have been on another world. For a moment that seemed to last forever, neither of them moved. And then Robert cleared his throat awkwardly.
Would you like to sit down, Letitia?
Yes, thank you.
They sat down on chairs facing each other, careful to maintain a proper distance between them. Robert searched for something to say that wouldn't make him sound like a complete idiot.
Letitia.
Tish.
I beg your pardon?
I prefer to be called Tish, if that's all right.
Yes, of course. Call me Bobby, if you like.
They looked right at each other for the first time, and Robert smiled suddenly.
Tell me, Tish, do you feel as uncomfortable in your outfit as I do in mine?
Letitia put her hands to her mouth, looking at him to check he wasn't shocked. Reassured by his smile, she lowered her hands and smiled back at him.
I hate this dress. If it was any tighter, it would be inside me. I haven't dared to eat or drink anything. I don't think there's anywhere for it to go. And every time I go to the toilet, I have to take 2 maids with me to unlace everything. I've been going rather a lot. I think it's nerves. And of course, if I say anything or try to complain, they just say it's traditional, as if that solved everything.
Right. If I hear the word tradition one more time, I think I'll scream. I was told I was getting married about 6 hours ago. How about you?
Same here. I suppose they thought if they gave us too much time to think about it, we'd run away or something.
They weren't far wrong. This isn't at all what I thought I'd be doing when I got up this morning. If I'd known, I'd have headed for the horizon so fast it would have made their heads spin. Of course, that was before I met you. I thought, well, I don't know what I thought, but you're all right.
Thanks. You really know how to compliment a lady, don't you?
Robert grinned.
Well, actually, no. I've been a military cadet most of my life. It's expected for those in the family unlikely ever to inherit. You don't get to meet many women in military training. How about you? Did you have anyone special in your life?
There was someone, but that's all over now. They found out about us and stopped us seeing each other.
Letitia smiled wryly.
He was one of my bodyguards. I'm not allowed out much either. Not since the Empress started raiding the families for maids. I knew poor Lindsay, the Shrek's niece who disappeared. She was so bright, so funny. Nowadays they keep us under guard as much as possible. Understandable, I suppose, but it makes for a very quiet life.
Robert nodded.
And now here we are, about to get married. It's going to seem strange having lifelong enemies as my in-laws.
Same here. Oh, do you Campbells really eat babies for breakfast?
Oh, every day. Beats the hell out of bran flakes.
Maybe we'll bring our families together like we're supposed to. Stranger things have happened. Bobby?
Yes, Tish?
If I have to marry someone, I'm glad it's someone like you.
Same here, Tish. Same here.
She put out her hand, and he took it gently, enfolding her small, slender fingers in his. And they sat there, smiling together, for an endless moment. And then Adrienne came bustling in.
All this time, and you've only got as far as holding hands. I don't know what's wrong with you young people these days. I'd have had him pinned up against the wall by now. But time's up, I'm afraid. Finley sent me to fetch you, Robert.
Urgent family business, and your presence is required.
Robert gave Letitia's hand one last squeeze and got to his feet.
Family business is always urgent, especially when it's inconvenient. I'm glad we had this chance to talk, Tish. I'll see you shortly.
Bye.
Letitia blew him a kiss. Robert snatched it out of midair, put it in an inner pocket over his heart, and only then allowed Adrienne to lead him away. It turned out to be quite a family gathering, all squeezed together in a side room, with guards outside the door to make sure they wouldn't be disturbed. Finley was there, at his most outrageously foppish, studying Adrienne through his pince-nez as though she were a stranger. William and Gerald were arguing quietly but heatedly, barely stopping to nod to Robert as he closed the door behind him. He took in their earnest faces, and his heart dropped. Something bad was in the wind. He could feel it. Finley cleared his throat, and everyone looked at him.
The Cabal himself cannot be here in person. He's had a communication from our allies on Shub. It came via a series of espers, so we're pretty sure it wasn't intercepted. It seems that some other house has discovered our connection with Shub.
Wait a minute. Hold everything. What's this about Shub? What allies have we got on that hellhole?
You have a right to know, now that you're to be a central part of family business. But you cannot discuss this with anyone outside the family, not even your wife. No one must know. Our existence as a house depends on this. For some time now, we've been secretly intriguing with the rogue AIs on Shub, in defiance of Empire policy. The enemies of humanity have been passing us designs for advanced technology to help us win the contract for mass production of the new star drive, in return for us making the drive available to them. They are desperate to remain the Empire's equal, and we need to contract. Our finances are somewhat depleted at the moment.
To be exact, we're in deep shit. If we don't get the contract, we're ruined, bankrupt.
William winced, but nodded.
We must win the contract if we are to survive as a clan. Everything depends on it.
Anyway, it appears someone has found out. They can't have any definite proof yet, or they'd have turned us into the Empress, and we'd all be facing a quick trial and a lingering execution.
Can you blame them? We're working with the AIs on Shub. They're dedicated to wiping out humanity in its entirety, and we're giving them the new star drive? Is it just me, or is this completely bloody crazy?
Please don't shout. This has all been discussed and decided at the highest clan levels. We have absolutely no intention of giving them the drive, whatever happens. We are ambitious and desperate, but not, as you say, crazy.
In the meantime, it's vital we find out who knows our secret. That's why you're here, Robert. We're already running several clandestine operations to discover our enemy, and you're uniquely suited to investigating the Shreks. But you're not to discuss this with your wife. She may be marrying into the Campbells, but for now she's still a Shrek. Use her, but don't trust her. Don't look so shocked, dear. This is family business, and the family always comes first.
It's important we discover how much our enemy knows. Anyone who knows too much must die. The safety of the clan is at risk.
What's the Campbell doing?
Said Gerald anxiously.
Why isn't he here? He should be making these kind of decisions, not us.
He's busy reassuring the AIs through the Esper link. We don't want them doing anything impulsive or unfortunate. We're only valuable to them as long as our connection remains a secret. He took a hell of a risk sending a messenger here, but it was important we know immediately. From now on, we don't go anywhere without guards, and no one is to go off on their own. Our new rival might try to kidnap one of us to pump that person for information and put pressure on the rest of us. You're especially at risk, Robert. You're not as used to this game as we are. We can't put you in seclusion right after your wedding. That would look just a little suspicious, like we had something to hide. But from now on, you and your new wife will have a double security presence. If she asks why, point out how easily that Esper zealot broke in. Now, let us return to the celebration before our absence becomes a talking point. Smiles and laughter, everyone. No point in putting weapons in our enemy's hands. After all, it's not certain they know that we know they suspect. You're looking puzzled, Gerald. Don't let it worry you. Just stick close to us, and if you feel like saying anything, rise above it. William, keep an eye on him. If he opens his mouth, stamp on his foot.
Adrienne looked at Finley thoughtfully.
Since when did you become such an accomplished conspirator?
Finley smiled at her dazzlingly.
It's in the blood, my dear. I am a Campbell, after all.
He took Robert by the arm and led him back into the crowded ballroom. Everywhere faces smiled and heads bowed, and Robert nodded numbly to them all. Some weren't really there, of course. Attending in person was a compliment and a privilege. The less well-connected usually had to settle for sending a hollow. If nothing else, it helped to cut down on duels. Nothing like a wedding to bring out old family quarrels. Robert thought about that to keep from thinking about anything else, but it didn't work. He pulled his arm free of Finley and gave him a hard look.
Just how much danger are we in, Finley? How much danger am I putting Letitia in by marrying her?
Not much more than she's already used to. She's a Shrek, after all, and they have a history of intrigue that makes us look timid. Now forget about all that and concentrate on your wedding.
James Kasser, vicar of the Church of Christ the Warrior, called the gathering to attend him, in the kind of voice usually reserved for a parade ground, and the two families separated out to form two groups, so that they could look down their noses at each other. They left a narrow aisle between the two groups, and almost before he knew it, Robert was heading for the aisle, surrounded by Finley and William and Gerald, all looking very stern and respectable. The bride was brought forward to walk beside him, surrounded by women of the Shrek family. Letitia arrived amid a crowd of whispered jokes and comments and stifled laughter, but Robert's companions stayed straight-faced, as custom required. Robert was grateful for that, at least. He had a strong feeling that just at this moment, even a bad joke would collapse him into howls of hysterical laughter. And then he and Letitia were walking down the aisle side by side, alone at last, both looking straight ahead and concentrating desperately on the moves and words they'd learned at rehearsal. They came to a halt before Kasser, resplendent now in a purple gown, who bowed curtly and began the wedding service in a calm, businesslike tone. Personally, Robert preferred it that way. It made both the vicar and the service seem less awe-inspiring. The words were familiar from any number of family weddings Robert and Letitia had attended since childhood, and they made their responses in calm, dignified voices. Everything went smoothly, and Robert even remembered to raise the veil before he kissed her. All that remained was the ceremonial tying of the knot. Kasser gestured for the page boy to bring forward the ceremonial golden cord on its platter. He wrapped the cord loosely about both their wrists, binding them together, and then called forward the church esper. Before the church could give its blessing, and thus validate the marriage, it was important that both parties were proved to be who they said they were. Nobody ever said the word clone, but it was never far from anyone's mind. Many of the guests stirred uneasily. The esp blockers had been shut down for this moment, and the threat of outside attack was that much greater. But mostly, the guests were concerned that their own little secrets might be detected and exposed by the esper. Everyone had something to hide. They needn't have worried. The esper knew better than to let his thoughts stray. There was a church guard standing off to one side with a gun trained on him. So he concentrated on the bride and groom before him, and everything was hushed.